Penguin Random House Audio presents Spineless, The Science of Jellyfish and the Art of Growing a Backbone. This is the author, Julie Burwald. Among the most beautiful, as well as the most common, of the marine animals which are to be met with upon our coasts are the jellyfish. And in the memories of most of us, is there not associated with the picture of breaking waves and seabirds floating indifferently in the blue sky, or on the water still more blue, the thoughts of many a ramble among the weedy rocks and living pools, where, for the time being, we all become naturalists, and where those who least know what they are likely to find in their search are most likely to approach the keen happiness of childhood? If so, the image of those crystal globes pulsating with life and gleaming with all the colors of the rainbow are perhaps the most strange, and certainly, in my estimation, the most delicately lovely creatures in the world. George J. Romanes, Jellyfish, Starfish, and Sea Urchins, Being a Research on Primitive Nervous Systems, 1885. Planula. 1. If You Dare. Hiroshima's downtown is a garden of modern architecture, interspersed with swaths of lovely green parks. In the center, there's a single structure, in ruins, capped by a skeleton of curved iron. This is the atomic bomb dome, located at the destruction's epicenter, the sole building that managed to remain standing amid the massive force that flattened everything else for miles in all directions. It is an astonishing memorial to both our capacity for horrifying devastation and our awesome resilience. The dome sits along the side of one of six tidal streams that flow through Hiroshima. In the murky green water, I watched thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, of pale pink disks parade by, a flood of jellyfish. Juxtaposed with the dome, the endless stream of jellyfish seemed to square off nature's power against our own, a battle as old as civilization that continues to play out in the decisions we make today. They were the first wild jellyfish I saw in years of chasing jellyfish. The milky creatures pulsed slowly, slower than my heartbeat, which dropped as I watched. The movements of their bells, trailing gossamer tentacles, were like millions of eyelashes, blinking open and closed and open again, giving me a feeling that these alien animals could peer deep into the soul of the sea. I found it impossible to fathom the source of this endless river of life. The jellies continued to flow by for as long as I stood and watched. Maybe you remember the first time you saw a jellyfish. Maybe you were lucky enough to stick your head under the ocean surface wearing a mask and watch the primal undulations of a jellyfish dancing to some internal rhythm. Maybe you felt a biting sting in the water and turned to see a gelatinous blob disappear like sinking mucus. Maybe you stood against the glass and watched the elegant clover on the back of a moon jellyfish or the graceful train of a sea nettle in an aquarium. Or maybe it was footage of a jellyfish hawking a cure for memory loss. I don't remember the very first jellyfish I saw. I grew up in a time before aquaria were full of jellyfish tanks in a very landlocked St. Louis. I never spent an extended period near the ocean until I was in college. In my junior year, 1987, I attended an English-speaking study abroad program in Tel Aviv. From a New England school where getting ready to go to a party meant putting on tattered jeans, a flannel shirt, and duck boots, I was a misfit among the other American students, who were a lot less style challenged. I found the Israelis my age no easier to get along with. At 19, they were required to serve in the army, while I had the freedom to jaunt off to college unencumbered. I stuffed my loneliness down with the hummus and baba ganoush sold from a cart on the street corner near my cinder block dorm. At about the same rate that my weight increased, my spirits sank. One day, I opened the door to the building where my class in Middle Eastern politics was held and spotted a sign out of the corner of my eye. It advertised a marine biology course, a week in a lot at the southern tip of Israel, studying the ecology of the Red Sea. Knowing next to nothing about biology or Eilat, not to mention the fact that I was hardly able to squeeze into my swimsuit anymore, I scrawled my name at the bottom of the list. It was clear I needed to put some distance between me and the pita cart. A few days later, with about 20 other students, I boarded a bus headed south at dawn. After a five-hour ride through the desert, we were offloaded and handed snorkels, masks, and fins. I think there was a quick instruction on keeping hands away from urchin spines and fire coral. I shuffled down the beach backward, the only way to walk in fins. When I slipped my face below the water's surface, it was as if I were Dorothy stepping into Oz. My dull, sad world erupted in a kaleidoscope of colors, shapes, and textures. I glided over creatures that I could have never imagined existed in my mostly landlocked life. Pink, purple, and yellow coral that branch encrusted and mounded. Blotchy lavender anemones, creeping crimson shrimp, twirling buff-colored worms, filigreed fans, spiked black urchins, a day-glow orange sponge with a violet slug curled around it, bowls of lemon-lime and watermelon-hued clams. Here, astonishingly, was paradise. That evening, the professor gave a lecture detailing 20 different species of coral living on the reef. He told us to memorize them all. Walking to the dorms after class, gazing at the moon's reflection on the Red Sea, I felt, for the first time in a long time, happy. Within days, I learned not only to recognize and identify the 20 different coral species, but to understand how they got along on the reef. I laid out 30-foot lengths of rope and measured the space each colony occupied along the line. I watched the coral engage in territorial feuds when their delicate tissues grew too close together. I learned to recognize the winner as the one whose thread-like stinging cells outnumbered those of its foe. It was a contrast to the battles that destabilized the Middle East. I found truth and beauty in these miniature clashes, which brought balance to the ecosystem. By the time I climbed back on the bus to Tel Aviv, marine biology had sunk its hooks deep into me. I felt that the intricate dynamics of the ocean were more deeply authentic than anything humans could create. 7 days of snorkeling and studying coral all day, and then peering into microscopes at constellations of plankton deep into the night, taught me that biology is the foundation of our world, the stuff that is not changed with the whims of humans. Its heritage, so much more ancient than our own, gave it the gravitas I'd been searching for. Studying this scaffolding on which we hang our existence was what I wanted to do with my life. After that first mind-blowing dive in Israel, I did go on to study ocean science in grad school. And that's probably the first time I saw a jellyfish. A few years after my work on jellyfish started, I dug out my old box of grad school memorabilia. And in a cardboard clamshell of old slides, the kind you have to stick into a projector, I found a hazy picture of what I now know was a compass jellyfish taken in Puget Sound. I don't remember taking it. In grad school, I didn't work on jellyfish or any other marine animal. I worked on the equations satellites use to tell us how much carbon dioxide the ocean can inhale. That was a big picture anyway, the kind of thing I told my parents so they could repeat it to their friends. The reality was much more obscure. I studied a single variable in those equations, one that only about a dozen people in the world recognized. After moving to landlocked Austin, Texas with my husband, I glumly slipped off the academic path and found my way into writing textbooks. It worked well when my two kids were young and I was always sleep deprived. But state-mandated academic standards soon quashed any sense of passion about the work. I had written and rewritten the same chapters on the physics of tossing balls into the air and dropping rocks off cliffs, on the bending and reflecting of waves, for nearly a decade, when a friend gave my name to an editor at National Geographic. They needed a writer to pen 3 paragraphs on the physics of water bugs skating up a meniscus. After it was done, I spotted the magazine on a grocery store rack. Flipping to my tiny byline to show the cashier, I crowed, "That's me."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?